I felt early on into the process that the purpose of me doing this is to generate an income later on in my life.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Torrin Shum, and in this episode, we're speaking with Gary Harvey, an award-winning property investor and mortgage broker who not only works with investors, but offers assistance to homeowners. You will learn exactly how Harvey built a portfolio that increased his family's wealth, what inspired him to start his property journey, and much, much more. A typical day for Harvey usually revolves around his clients and meetings, which keeps him pretty occupied in his business.
My days are pretty varied, but it's a lot of loan applications, strategizing with clients, client meetings. What I do talk through with my clients, some of their property decisions as well, and provide some guidance there. I wouldn't say I would provide advice. It's a pretty strong word in this industry. So it's more around, education and guidance, understanding what they want to try and do and what types of investments might help deliver that. And I think that's the best way for people to learn as well, to be honest. So that's pretty much my day. I keep pretty busy doing it. And a lot of client meetings, I try to get out and see my clients, in their home or office to provide that level of service.
Harvey believes providing an overwhelming amount of advice can push his clients away. So he focuses on guiding them so that they can make their own decisions.
I draw out a lot of things and I do cash flow modelling for people in a very simplistic way so they understand it, because it's not actually that complicated. But sometimes a big spreadsheet can look a bit daunting. Particularly for new investors. So I try to keep it really simple and make sure they understand at each point.
Prior to working with investors, Harvey shares details about his upbringing, where he lived in different parts of Australia during his younger years.
I grew up in Adelaide. I was born over there and spent the first 12 years of my life there. Moved around a couple of times, but lived pretty close to the beach, so that was always nice growing up. And then my father got a transfer for work back in 87, so we came, the whole family moved over to Melbourne, and I've been out in the northeastern suburbs of Melbourne ever since.
Despite living in Melbourne for most of his life, he still has fond memories as a kid in Adelaide.
I was a typical young boy, I guess. I loved, riding push bikes and skateboards and hanging out at the beach. I just remember spending a lot of time down on the water, which was good. It was interesting. I think about it a little bit. Like, I'd go down to the beach on my own, probably from the age of 8 upwards, and then today when I had my own, when I had my own kids many years ago, I wonder whether I'd do that now. It's a bit of a different kind of world perhaps, but we were always free. Mum always knew where we were and just had a lot of fun, really. So played footy, a little bit of cricket, so pretty typical young kid, I guess.
Regardless of being away from the beach, Harvey continues to enjoy his life as a kid in Victoria.
I really enjoyed that, and look, that really continued when I came to Melbourne. I was fortunate enough to live in a great street. We had lots of teenage kids in the street. It'd be nothing for us to have, a dozen or 15 kids all hanging out in the street after school each day. So, we just had a good environment to grow up, always something to do.
Harvey reveals how he did not have a strong passion or let alone an interest for school.
I was never that interested. In school, I kind of just got by, to be honest. I didn't really know what direction my life was going to take. After high school, I still remember I didn't even pick subjects that really had that much of an interest to me. It was kind of bizarre. I just, you know, felt that I probably should finish year 12, but I didn't apply for uni. I was only about one of six or seven, I think, in my year that didn't go on to just seek a place in uni. But I'd been working from the age of 15, just doing part-time jobs, you know, hospitality, and I did some gardening work and things like that. So when I did leave school, I actually ended up working at McDonald's full-time for about 3 or 4 months, because I'd been there part-time while at school, and while I was just kind of working out what I wanted to do, they said I could work there full-time, and that's what I did, really. So I got sick of eating McDonald's, because that's pretty much what we did most days. But I enjoyed the camaraderie that job brought. I met a lot of good people and still got a lot of those people I worked with back in, that was in the early 90s. They're still friends of mine today. So it was a great place to work, and, you know, there's a lot of discipline in the store that I worked in anyway. Taught you a good work ethic. Had a lot of fun. So yeah, it was really good. I spent probably 2 years at Macca's, maybe two and a half.
And even back then, were they still called Macca's, or was that a term that came up more recently? Because I can't remember when that was coined.
Yeah, we used to still call it Macca's. Yeah. And then I ended up doing I did all sorts of jobs. I ended up doing their maintenance work. I remember starting work at 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, that's when the maintenance person started to, you know, clean all the floors and windows and everything to get the store ready for the next day. So sort of tried a bit of everything, really.
After working at McDonald's, Harvey shares what he went on to next.
So then I worked in a factory, which was local to where I was living. We were making electronic transformers for the telecommunication sector. I did that for probably about 5 years, with a little bit of a gap where I worked in the car industry for a year, just to try something different and get out of sort of the concrete walls of the factory. But I didn't really enjoy the car industry that much. I'm glad I did it for a bit of experience, but it wasn't really for me. And then after the 5 years in the factory, I had to be outdoors. I'm a bit of an outdoors person. So I just said, look, I'm going to get into the building industry. I had no idea what I was going to do, how it was going to look. But I remember, because at that point in my life, I'd borrowed money for a car and borrowed money for a motorbike, and, you know, and everything was fine while I had this steady income coming in and I was living at home. And then when I decided to make that change, and I basically became a labourer on just a domestic building site. So my salary dropped a lot, and I, you know, that reality of, well, now I've got all this stuff I can't afford. So I kind of dismantled all that, sold it off, and just set about learning a whole range of different things in the building industry, because I love making things. I really spent about probably I started my I did it for a couple of years. I travelled overseas in the late 90s for 6 months with my now wife. We did a bit of a trip around the world. And then when I come back, I started my own business. And I had that business going for about 18 years. I only got rid of it maybe 3 or 4 years ago.
We discover what led Harvey to find himself in the mortgage broking business.
I started in 2006, and it was an interesting way into the industry, because I was 6 years into my property investment journey at that point. I started in 2000, and the mortgage broker that was helping me at the time said, well, you're coming to me all the time for money, why don't I teach you how to do it yourself? And I hadn't even thought about it. I was a tradesperson, but I wasn't a qualified tradesperson. I just did all sorts of different things. And when he suggested that, and he showed me the modelling of the business, and it, you know, really appealed to me, and I got started that way. and I transitioned probably for about 7 or 8 years, to be honest. I did both roles part-time because I, at that point in my life, I couldn't afford any dip in my income because of my commitments I'd made as an investor. So I figured, and I knew that building a mortgage business is a time, it takes quite a bit of time, particularly to build it the way I wanted to. Just, you know, I don't consider myself a salesperson. I just like to help and share information with people. So, you know, you don't, the phone doesn't ring off the hook when you first decide to be a mortgage broker. It takes a long time to get the word out there. So I did it part-time for good 6 or 7 years and eventually went full-time, I guess, maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
As Harvey was only mortgage brokering part-time, he did have another job to cover his everyday living expenses.
We used to restore brickwork on old homes, so period-style homes. There's a technique called tuck pointing. So we'd repair that old tuck pointing, which is on the facade of those old period homes. So I did that, and when I look back, it was quite good because you didn't get a lot of interruptions in that business. You know, you just set up, like, we could be on jobs for, you know, weeks, months. So you just chip away each day at a section of the brickwork. And so, it allowed me time to take phone calls, and, you know, if I had to duck out and see clients during the day, it didn't really inconvenience the way that business ran.
Harvey goes on to explain how he found himself in this type of business and why everything he did was all done by hand.
So I was working with a bricklayer. I wanted to learn how to lay bricks. And so I did that for quite a while with him, maybe a year or more. And he, apart from laying bricks, he would do this tuck pointing, which is basically replacing mortar in a specific way on these period homes. So when he showed me that, I had a lot of interest in it. I thought, you know, I could really see myself creating a business doing that. I've got a lot of patience, and you certainly needed that with that job. And I had a lot of pride in what I did. So at the end of the day, you could look back and see the finished product of what you'd done that day. And you always were working for happy clients too, because they'd come home from work each day and, you know, see the improvement to the front of their home. So kind of just fell into it, really, and just had a go, yeah.
Harvey explains the steps he encountered to find his way into property investment, as well as the influence of the people he surrounded himself with.
I think my parents were probably a little bit risk adverse when it came to a lot of investment. Like, my parents hadn't invested in property. But I'd speak to a lot of people. I'd speak to builders and developers, and I'd just hear all this stuff about, you know, what they're doing, what's possible. And it just appealed to me. I just felt I had to go and learn this stuff. You know, I didn't know really what it looked like at that point in time. And I'd talk, you know, I had a few close friends that we would talk about stuff and probably inspire each other a little bit. And one of them told me, I still remember the day I bought it, the Robert Kiyosaki Rich Dad Poor Dad. And I don't read, so I bought the audio and just listened to it in my van. I just listened to it constantly, just over and over and over, and it really resonated with me what he spoke about. And then I just set out to try to learn to, you know, build something in the background while I was working, because I knew that just working as I was a labourer in a sense in my business. It was all manual labour. It was only going to get me so far. So I just had this urge to learn that there's got to be another way to try and advance yourself. So, a couple of good friends certainly were encouraging. You know, not everyone is. It's quite interesting when you look back. You know, you can get quite excited about what you want to do, and you just, you know, kind of get shut down a bit by other people. So I just sort of kept close with the people that were encouraging, and and yeah, listened to this material, and I was learning a lot. And then I guess it just gave me the confidence to just start. You know, I just because it wasn't probably getting this. You know, I was telling my parents what I wanted to do, and because they hadn't done it before, they didn't really understand it, and couldn't offer me, you know, that encouragement. They were, you know, probably a bit worried about it, but I just had this attitude. You know, I came into this world with nothing, and I've got nothing to lose. So I just went on this journey, I guess, of learning and having a go. And it took me a little while, because I'd often ask, people their views and opinions, and a lot of it was negative. So I ended up just doing a lot of it in silence, to be honest. I just, like I said, I had a couple of close friends that we'd talk, I could chat with, but in the, you know, my greater network, I guess, I just couldn't, you know, I felt like I was defending myself all the time. So I just thought, well, you know, bugger it, I'll just go and do what I got to do, and what will be. So that's what I did.
Harvey goes on to further explain how his parents reacted to what he wanted to do.
I wanted to invest in property, and I just think they, you know, because, you know, it involves borrowing money, and you know, they're probably, as parents are, they're just looking out for you, don't want to see you get into something you can't deal with. And I think it's like most things, if you don't understand it, you can become afraid of it. And, you know, just want to keep it a bit distant. So I think it was more of that with my parents. And, they certainly didn't, put me down about doing it, but they weren't throwing the encouragement around. So I just, I don't know, I guess I just had it in this feeling that, like, I just want to go and learn this and do it. Just did sort of, you know, set aside what other people were saying. I just kept pretty focused on what I had to do, and worked hard. You know, worked a lot of different jobs and hours and things like that to just make sure I could keep it all together and just back myself in, really.
Coming up after the break, we'll take a look at how Harvey got into his first property.
So I was a bit tentative, but my wife was like, no, let's just buy it. You know, let's just buy our first house. And I'm glad she was pretty pushy on that, because we ended up buying a place and it was a duplex.
We find out a little bit about his portfolio and the current number of properties he has.
I still hold 32 today. One of them's my own home, and one of them's a lifestyle property, and then the rest are investments.
And that's next. I'm Tyron Shum, and you're listening to Property Investory. He delves into his property investing journey all the way to the beginning, starting with his first property.
We bought... So my now wife and I back then bought our first home in 2000. We'd come back from our trip around the world in the late 98, and then we'd sort of settled back in for a year. We'd say we had a little bit of money each. I think we had about 25,000 each, you know, as a deposit. I was pretty nervous at that point, because I think at that point I hadn't really worked out in my own mind that I wanted to be really involved in real estate. So I was a bit tentative, but my wife was like, no, let's just buy it. You know, let's just buy our first house. And I'm glad she was pretty pushy on that, because we ended up buying a place and it was a duplex. And so that didn't make me feel real comfortable at the start. I'm like, I bought my first house, but I'm sharing it with someone else. You know, we're sharing the driveway and the garage and so on. But, you know, eventually I understood what this meant for us, that we, you know, we'd bought our own home and we'd also bought an investment at the same time. And I was able to modify that property a lot to make it a little bit more separate, so people, you know, we all had our own privacy. And and I fixed it up a lot with the skills that I'd been learning in the building industry. And I think, yeah, it just really motivated me going through that process of, you know, what's possible. So we had that property. We ended up having that property for, we sold, because I ended up subdividing it many years down the track. We sold the first one about 10 years later, and then we sold the second one probably only about 4 years ago. So we ended up holding a portion of that property for a long time. And I think as I'd created, you know, value in that property, so built up equity and were paying the loan down, I just thought, well, you know, now's the time to explore the opportunity to start investing on a bigger scale.
Harvey explains why he and his wife decided to buy a duplex for a home.
It was a couple of things. It was something in our price range in the area that we wanted to live in. And it was a little bit unique, probably didn't appeal to everyone. And, yeah, again, she just said, well, look, let's just go. It's not our forever home. Let's buy it. You know, and I was like, oh, I don't want, you know, someone living right next door or sharing the garage and all those sorts of things. And I probably just was focusing at the time in the wrong areas, because I wasn't even really thinking much like an investor, let alone a property owner, really at that time. I almost wanted, let's get the nice house and, you know, whatever, whereas she was more, well, let's just get into the market, you know, and look how good this, well, you know, we can rent next door out from $150 a week or whatever it was back then. How much is that going to help us? And I'm just so glad that she pushed that, and we ended up proceeding, because, you know, in hindsight, it worked out to be just fantastic, really.
We find out a little bit about his portfolio and the current number of properties he has.
I still hold 32 today. One of them's my own home, and one of them's a lifestyle property. And then the rest are investments.
So roughly how much would you say that portfolio is worth? Because it's a substantial amount of properties there.
Look, it's probably not, when I tell you the figure, it might surprise you. It's not worth as much as probably what you might perceive, because I bought a lot of cheap properties. And I'll talk to you about, what I did and why I did it. I sort of keep tabs on my figures pretty well. So I've got it currently valued at just over $7 million. Today, but to help understand why, I bought a lot of my first investment outside of that duplex. I paid $55,000 for. So I bought a lot of cheap investments, and of the ones I'm holding at the moment. So outside of my own property, the most expensive investment property I've ever purchased was $336,000.
I'm assuming a majority of the properties that you purchase are positive cash flow, if that's the case. Is that correct to say?
I get really good cash flow out of them. And that, it's interesting that you brought that up, because it actually was my focus from the start. For a number of reasons, I felt early on into the process that the purpose of me doing this is to generate an income later on in my life.
And then that's what I actually was going to ask. Like, do you know roughly how much income you're generating from this portfolio?
So at the moment, the income's about $330,000, just over $330,000.
As Harvey has purchased over 30 properties in his life, it's inevitable to experience a lot of ups and downs. We explore what one of his worst investing moments were.
I have thought about that, and I don't know if I'd say I'd have categorized it as anything that I've done as a worst experience. I just take everything and sort of in my stride. I've certainly lost money on my investments, you know, many hundreds of thousands of dollars for sure over the years, by trying things that weren't that successful. And again, when you reflect on it, probably didn't have the expertise, didn't build up my knowledge prior to going into that strategy. Nothing's been a disaster, And I've always, and I guess this is a really important point, I've always made sure my portfolio could handle basically anything that was thrown at me. So, and a really good point I want to make for the listeners too is not only in making sure I selected a lot of different properties and different locations to give me some diversity, that to me was a bit of a risk management strategy, but I also made sure that I was continually growing my income outside of the investments, in my case, my business, so that when things didn't quite go to plan, I had resources I could always draw on. And I always viewed it as a long game. So, you know, all the little speed humps I'm going to encounter along the way are just that. None of them are going to be detrimental to the overall outcome, but we must be in a position to be able to deal with them. So, I did a development once and I didn't really make any money out of that.
Could you talk about that one? That sounds like a very, very interesting story. How did you find that development and what happened?
I bought a block of land out in country Victoria in a town, and had an old place on it. I think I paid about 80,000 at the time. And I eventually got permits to build 4 units on it. But that took a long period of time and I was pretty clunky through the process. And yeah, ultimately didn't do my due diligence enough to understand what the true cost was going to be, what the end value was going to be. And cut a long story short, I was fortunate enough to sell them to the Department of Housing. The government was at the time looking for more housing, and a friend of mine actually said, look, he knew about this. He said, why don't you put your property forward? Because he knew I was having a bit of a trouble with it. I didn't know how I was going to finance the build at the time, because you worked out, you know, I mean, the value was going to be virtually what I was going to owe. So there was not going to be any equity really in the deal. He said, well, why don't you sell them put it up to the Department of Housing? They might be interested in buying it. And which they did. So once I had a signed contract for 4 units, then it was really easy to get the finance from the bank, so we ended up just building them. But I look, to be honest, I lost interest in the whole project, and I didn't even keep real good track of the numbers. But I certainly didn't make any money, and I probably would have been underwater, I don't know, 50 to 100 grand probably throughout the process.
Harvey tells us what initially interested him to jump into this type of deal.
I thought there was, and I guess it highlights my naivety, really, and inexperience. At the time, I bought a block of land for, you know, 80-something thousand, and then I thought, well, you know, I'll build 4 units and I'll sell them for, you know, 250,000, 280,000, and, you know, there'd have to be profit. But, you know, I had a bit of a sloping block, and, you know, and throughout the whole planning process, we worked out that, you know, all the drainage had to go the opposite way to the slope, and, you know, so we had to build all these retaining walls, and, yeah, so cost just blew out, you know. So, you know, a more experienced developer, yeah, probably would have seen those signs at the start. So I think, someone who knew what they're doing would have made money, but someone like me who didn't really know what they were doing didn't make money. So it was certainly a good lesson to learn. It hasn't tarnished my view on developing. It's like anything, you just need to understand what you're getting yourself into. I just didn't enjoy the process, to be honest. It just, you know, money aside, even if I told you now I'd made 100 grand, I'd still say I didn't enjoy the process. It wasn't really my thing.
I guess with that one, was that close to where you were, or was it sort of a regional town kind of thing?
It was a regional town, yeah. So I ended up getting a builder. It was actually a builder from Melbourne, set himself up there for 6 months while he built them. So I had, they were really well built. But to be honest, I was that disinterested in it, I never even saw the finished product. I went up to them. I remember going to the site when it was at lockup, And that was the last time I've since driven past the site, but that was the last time I went to the site. So I just had no interest in it. I just wanted to get it finished as quickly as possible and just move on.
After looking at some of his not-so-great moments in his property investment journey, we turn it around and take a look at his aha moments.
I think the whole journey has been that, and even up until recently. So I set out to, you know, to buy properties that I could afford with very good rental return, for a number of reasons. Like I said, one of the reasons to generate an income stream later, but it was also what I could afford at the time. You know, I'd only, you know, started my business, wasn't generating huge profits at the time, so I had to focus on what I was able to do. And I deliberately did that rather than worrying about what I couldn't do. And it was great to be able to buy these properties where the cash flow was very good. So it enabled me, you know, most of them were reasonably cash flow neutral, so, you know, I could just keep buying. I'd try and add value to them where I could to fast track my equity, and I'd get family to come in and invest with me, you know, to provide deposits and things so I could move quicker in the process. And that turned out to be very good. I also did a lot of investing in the mining sector around Australia, probably around the 2004, I'm just having a bit of a look, 2004 through 2007. And that worked out to be very good for me, and I still pretty much hold all of those properties today. But I managed that risk by buying cheaper properties. I got to ride that growth boom, both capital growth and rental growth. And look, you know, a lot of the properties have pulled back a bit now since their peak, but I took all the equity out of them at the peak. So I've been able to, in a roundabout way, enjoy the fruits of that growth, rather than, you know, looking at it now going, okay, well, it's come off X percent off its peak and not be able to, you know, grab that equity and go and do other things with it. So I'm glad I made that decision.
Which is great, because, you know, it sounds like because you bought it under market value and it's positive cash flow, it pretty much pays itself off. So it doesn't even matter if the values haven't gone up. I mean, it'd be great if it does, but in some sense, you've already tapped into equity.
I've already tapped into it now. Yeah, you're right. And it's something I think about a lot, because the value of my portfolio is not that, I'm not that excited about it. But what I am excited is maximizing the income from it. And I've still got a lot of debt to pay off, because I'm going to be, you know, paying off these loans still for probably another good 10 to 15 years, I would say, which seems like a long time because I started 20 years ago. But I've also enjoyed myself along the way, and that was a very a specific thing that we as a family decided, because it wasn't just, let's do this and, you know, hope we're still here in 30 years to enjoy it. Let's get a good blend of planning for tomorrow, but also taking some of the rewards along the way. So that was a conscious decision, and one that I'm very, very pleased that we did. So it means my debt's higher now than what it could have been. But, it comes back to what I said earlier about just making sure you're robust and can deal with things. And, you know, we manage it very comfortably. And, we're on principal and interest repayments on pretty much everything now. And, you know, just on that path now to, you know, to owning as many as practical by the time, I think it's right to start, you know, using it as part of our income, really.
After listening to Gary Harvey share his ups and downs throughout his journey, We'll keep the conversation going, where we'll talk about how to apply his strategy for property investment.
An asset is something that puts money in your pocket. So if I'm buying something that's not doing that, then it's not fitting that particular definition of an asset. Now, I think the definition is broader than that, but that point really resonated with me.
The kind of mindset he has adopted throughout his property investment journey.
I think what's really important is just listening to people and then taking that information and forming your own view on what you think is going to work for you, because there's no one way.
And that's next time in a future episode of Property Investory.